Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Dave's Good Vibration Station with Dave Cohen, right here on LA Talk Radio.
What's up, guys? You've just tuned in to Dave's Good Vibration Station here on LATalkRadio.com, world's most listened to internet talk radio station. I'm your host, Davey. And as you know, this is the show where we talk about anything and everything to raise your vibration. We have an extremely powerful show lined up for you guys. First and foremost, I want to send my unconditional love, light, happiness, abundance, joy, and laughter from our hearts to yours. I want to thank you for spending your Sunday afternoon or evening or morning or Monday morning, depending on where you are located on the planet, with us here on LA Talk Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, lovers and friends, as you know, this is the show where we talk about anything and everything to raise your vibration. I'm your host, Davey, and you've just tuned in to Dave's Good Vibration Station here on LATalkRadio.com. We have a very, very special show lined up for you guys today. For those of you that are avid listeners, which each and every single one of you are, and if you're not, you should become one. you're very familiar with our brother. There are no words, actually, that I have within my consciousness to express the full unconditional love and appreciation that I have for this individual. I'd like to welcome Bruce Rawls to the show once again. As you guys know, we do have him on at least once a month to spread his wisdom, his knowledge, his understanding of the universe, and the laws that govern us as vibrational beings. First and foremost, welcome to the show, Bruce. We love you. Thank you for being here. Such a pleasure to have you. I've missed you, first and foremost, and so have the listeners. We've actually gotten a few emails saying, we miss Bruce. They were looking forward to hearing a show from you. Was it the third Sunday of last month? I believe so. And got a couple emails from people saying, hey, where's Bruce? I was really looking forward to hearing what he had to say. So, ladies and gentlemen, Bruce is back and spreading the positive energy as he always does. Welcome to the show, Bruce, and thank you for spending your time with us here today.
Well, thank you, David. I'm always a bit taken aback when you're very, very generous introductions kind of leave me scratching my head. It's like, who's the guy he's talking about here?
And he's humble, ladies and gentlemen. And he's humble.
Well, the thing of it is, and we can get into this, but I think I'm very appreciative of what you've shared, but I want to deflect that, not in a way to deny your appreciation, but to refocus it perhaps on the essence of what we really all are, because I think that's the one that really deserves all the kudos and the accolades and the acclaim and so forth.
Because the
little selves that we think we are. And I think that what we're going to talk about today fits into this very nicely.
Yes.
Are just the tiniest shadow of a reflection, of an echo, of a distortion, of a whatever, you know. And to back that up a little bit, I think it might be good to talk about I think in our email exchange this morning, we talked about reading at least the first couple of sections, which are pretty short, in the third chapter of the Geometry Code, since we've been sort of on a sequential run through that second book.
Yes, which I want to thank you so much for allowing.
Thank you for helping, you know, get the word out, because that helps support what I'm doing, and hopefully it will support your readers and listeners and anyone else that might be listening to the archives later on to find things that will help them to undo what doesn't work. And that's kind of what I think our conversations are really all about, isn't it?
So true.
So to preface it, I thought what might be interesting, and what you said kind of triggered a reminder that one of the great metaphors in literature from, well, a few centuries back, is Plato's metaphor. Anyway, the story about the cave. And it's this classic cave story that depicts a whole bunch of prisoners who have been chained for years and years, and they've gotten so accustomed to the minimal light that all they see is occasionally, and they're chained in such a way that their backs are to the opening of the cave, which is, you know, in the distance, and occasionally there will be a little flicker of sunlight that comes through the opening of the cave, and what they see is just the faintest outline of their shadows.
Yes.
And they're all chained together, so they can't look at each other, and they can't see themselves, and all they can see is these just sort of obscure, shifting shadows. And I'm paraphrasing this greatly, of course, but that's kind of my recollection of that cave metaphor from the Greek philosopher.
No, I love it. I love it. I love it. And there's a reason why it's been so revered, right?
Yeah, because I think it represents exactly what we're doing in this world, because we see a reflection of our mind's activity.
Yes.
We see just the vaguest, flimsiest, dimmest, or, you know, hint of the activity of our mind, and we have, you know, for lack of a better source of material, become so focused on that because we've practiced the role of identifying with that shadow so thoroughly that we've forgotten that our reality is this glorious. I mean, even in the cave metaphor, the reality is what they really are is the free person that has become imprisoned, and it doesn't. I don't know if the allegory talks about how they got there, but it's just basically, you know, the current situation. But I think that it speaks to all of us to remind us that we're just seeing a little tiny reflection of what the mind is capable of.
Yes.
And then it goes on to say that, you know, if you have someone who's freed from that, if someone, you know, figures out how to break through the chains or chains, or someone, you know, comes in with a key and unlocks one of the prisoners, they don't all jump up in glee, you know, upon being freed, because you get accustomed to thinking that this reflection, this shadow, is the big deal.
That's so true.
And then we think, well, that's, you know, isn't that what I am? And I think that's true when we identify with our bodies and our personas and forget that there's this essence that is beyond space and time and beyond the ephemeral day-to-day stuff that we are so engrossed in. And you know, it's kind of obvious that, that would be pretty normal, and it'd be kind of unusual if we didn't. But I think there's right. this continuous hint that there's this isn't our real home, that there's something beyond that that we're all looking for. And some people respond to that call more quickly and more frequently than others, it would seem. But we're all inexorably drawn to that inner prompting that suggests that there's got to be something more here. There's got to be something that is lasting. And that's why I think I started this chapter out with, you know, what are the laws that govern our world and maybe exactly. beyond our world.
Exactly, exactly, exactly.
So is it okay if I just read some of those?
Oh, you know what?
The first two sections?
Yeah, I was going to ask you. I was going to say, I'd love for you to share a couple of the kind of foundational sections that really define what we're talking about here. Because
okay,
if there's
okay.
– I really want to say, and right before you get into this, I want the listeners to just grasp for a concept, like the information that's going to be told here might be a little bit beyond what you traditionally perceive to be, you know, normal, right? What is normal? But my point is, if there is one person, or if there is one way for it to be said, it's definitely what you're about to hear. So, Bruce, please take it away, brother. And I was just preparing the listeners for to open their minds a little bit and to really think about what you're saying, right?
Okay. Well, there's probably countless ways to say what I'm about to say, but this is one way that hopefully will be helpful. So I'll just read. This is the first two sections in the third chapter of my second book, which is called The Geometry Code.
Yes.
And It's basically universal symbolic mirrors of natural laws within us, friendly reminders of inclusion to forgive the dreamer of separation. That's the long subtitle. But we've talked in previous conversations, David and I, about the first couple of chapters, which are about identity and then the take-home lessons from modern physics. Exactly. The question of identity. Exactly. And so if anybody wants to go back and listen to those, it'll provide the context. But going forward, I wanted to provide a context for these seven hermetic laws that really form sort of a backbone of the rest of the book.
Yes.
And so this will actually be a preface to not only this chapter, but also the next seven conversations that we'll have about the seven hermetic laws. So I'll just go ahead and read this section. The heading for this first one is Beautiful. Seven Changeless Laws About Change.
Yes.
Universal laws or principles known from ancient times have long been revered by those seeking to find the unchanged, unchanging, and unchangeable truth underlying all form and expression. Ultimately, we all seek the dependable, reliable, and consistent, something we can honestly trust. Eventually, we give up on trying to make our faulty inferences work from isolated special cases, and in parentheses I have our lives on planet Earth, and the distortions of perception.
Yes.
We come to realize that we must find rules that are always true and generalize if we want a happy solution to the dysfunctional practice of taking our personal interpretations seriously.
Yes. Beautiful.
If we base our choices on an ever-shifting landscape founded on differing opinions and values, how can we get our true bearings? If we attempt to judge from a world that not only changes with time and space, but from person to person and culture to culture, isn't the very basis we are using flawed?
Wow.
It's all pretty silly to rely on circumstances, conditions, and ephemeral events that morph and vary with the whimsy of fate and the biases of our tiny human perspectives. But, one asks, what else do we have to go on? Upon what else can we rely?
Wow.
What cues for guiding our lives do work? It's obviously helpful to find laws or principles that do not change. Otherwise, we just have to keep starting over and over again, relearning every time the temporary guide changes, never certain, secure, or serene about where we're placing our trust.
Yes. Yes.
So does that make sense?
Oh, it makes perfect sense. I mean, it's like, and the way that it's worded, the way that it's said is beautiful, man. I mean, just perfectly.
Well, thanks. I was just trying to capture, you know, what has been my quest. And I think I suspect for, you know, all the listeners, it may take different forms, but I think deep down inside of all of us, right. There is an awareness that we know there's something more to life. We don't know exactly what it is, but yes. there's got to be something more to life, and that's you know, an awareness that we can draw from and follow and discover that there are things that are consistent. There are principles and ideas that don't change, and that our identity can actually shift to those. And that's like what I tried to cover in the first chapter, that, you know, the question of identity, that we do have an identity that is eternal, that is unchanging, that doesn't disappear with the least little, you know, upset or right. change in circumstances.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, Bruce, I mean, every single aspect of this really – see, the way that I see this is – everything is just a it's literally like a hologramic projection. And how you just stated right here, it says, it's all pretty silly to rely on circumstances, conditions, and ephemeral events that morph and vary with the whimsy of fate and the basis of our tiny human perspectives, right? So basically, it's silly to rely on the circumstances that we think are so real. We think these tangible, you know, we think the microphone that I'm speaking into is a tangible physical microphone. We think that the, you know, and hopefully none of us are dealing with anything like this, but, you know, the lawsuits that you're going through is so real. You're trying to fight this or you know, just as Bruce, you and I were talking about earlier, and I send my love you know, to everyone that requires everyone has the love, so it's not like me sending it's going to do anything better, but, you know, it's a nice thought. But I send my love to, you know, all the people in your family that are currently healing. And I was saying how I'm, you know, going through similar experiences. It's like it's all just an illusion. An illness is not an illness unless somebody accepts that it's an illness. You know, what's an illness if you feel great? You
know? Well, that's just it. Is if we can look at the identification that we have, if we're not identified, and again, this isn't necessarily certainly for most people, it's not an overnight process. But there are examples of people who have, through typically numerous decades or maybe even lifetimes of systematic, persistent, mindful choice, chosen against
exactly
the idea that the finite self that they see in the bathroom mirror every morning, or that you know, shows up in a selfie photograph, or you know, the picture on the driver's license, or, you know, fill in the blanks. You know, we've been going through a lot of family photos, so, you know, there could be one of those. You know,
if
we think that reflection, that shadow on Plato's cave, is what we are, then that's a pretty abysmal, you know, demeaning self-concept.
So true.
Basically. So true. Not that we don't, you know, do what we can to, you know, brush your teeth and get health checkups and you know, do the kind-hearted things to yourself and everyone in your life touches. Right. I mean, it'd be silly not to do that on the level of form. But I think there's always this little part of us that says, yeah, but I know there's something more. I know that there's an essence here that has to transcend the forms that come and go. And, you know, religions have tried to capture this for years, and there's an enormous amount of spiritual legacy and traditions that speak to this in various terms. I think the common denominator is that there's something that doesn't change. There's something that outlives the forms that come and go. And so this next section of that third chapter is identifying with what never changes. So shall I just go ahead and read that?
I that was my next request.
Okay.
That's beautiful.
Well, great then.
We are on the same vibration. Talk about vibration. We're sharing a vibration. I was literally just going to say, Bruce, I would love to hear the next section.
Okay. Very good. Well, I'll be happy to oblige.
Beautiful. Okay.
There are seven hermetic laws or principles that have been known since antiquity, attributed to Hermes Trismegistus of pre-dynastic Egypt. These laws work all the time in every situation, regardless of one's circumstances, geography, status, demographics, or any other factors. They apply universally. These seven laws also have completely different meanings, interpretations, and outcomes, depending on which thought system or internal teacher we use to apply them with. Learning about laws is only truly helpful if we have a purpose intended for our liberation, a reason for applying the laws. As we become aware that we are never exempt from universal laws, we realize that our freedom waits for us to unlock the code and practice these laws with intelligent, thoughtful application.
Wow.
As we discover, the only truly helpful way to apply them is to apply them with the assistance of our ever-present transpersonal inner guide. This helps us strengthen our identification with what never changes. Otherwise, we're back to identifying with the changing, fluctuating, vacillating tides of fate, fancy, and fantasy. Identifying ourself with what is eternal anchors us, or anchors our awareness in truth, rather than in what inevitably disappoints, decays, and dies.
Yes.
So the intent of this paragraph was to be a reminder that if we you know hitch our star, so to speak, you know, to hitch our mind to the star of the constancy of essence, rather than the fleeting and ephemeral comings and goings of stuff and bodies and you know, things that change. An example, you know, we're going to be ultimately better off, and in ways that we can't even possibly imagine. But that's the beauty of it is it unfolds for us. The more we practice that, the more we, you know, forgive ourselves for having made up a dream that's ephemeral, and not take it personally and not make a big deal out of it. The less we identify with that, the changes, and the more we identify with what is eternal. One actually very pragmatic example that occurred to me years ago that I've always tried to do is when, you know, people say, well, how old are you? Mm. I say, well, I think a more useful, you know, even within the fleeting nature of our bodies and what comes and goes, just remembering someone's birth date and birth year is probably far more helpful than remembering how old you are, because you have to update, you know, whether it's an address book that's in Treeware or an electronic form or in your head.
Yes,
you have to update that every year, right? So
yes.
why not get something that at least lasts a lifetime?
Exactly, of course,
in your records, right?
Exactly.
So so for that reason, that's sort of my, you know, just quick and dirty example of a different approach to things that focuses on something that at least in a longer time span doesn't change. But ultimately, we want to go beyond what changes altogether. But we need these little training wheel ideas to help us through. And I think that's, you know, a reasonable starting example of that.
Exactly. Exactly. We can't – it's like, you know, you can't just go from 1 to 10. You need to work your way. It's easing it's easing, instead of just jumping straight into it and just full-fledged, you know, kind of warping everything that you've known, warping everything that you've ever lived. It's kind of like a somewhat of a calm, collective easing by just piecemealing this information into consciousness and saying, kind of just slowly breaking the barriers that hold the human condition back from believing these concepts. You know, that's kind of, I don't know. I would see it as a way of easing, as a way of
yeah. Gently.
If that makes sense. Like
very
a way,
much so.
a way of like gently easing. Okay, so if you were to take
merrily, merrily, merrily.
Thank you. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, and it can be a very gentle process if we look at our resistance to shifting that identity, and at each turn, whenever we're asked to see the folly of our identification with what changes, anchor it with what doesn't change, which is really our eternal relationship with our source and with each other.
Yes.
And I think that's where we have a really wonderful classroom, and that was I think an identity paradigm that I found really helpful early on, beginning to study non-dual metaphysics again about 8 years ago, when it occurred to me that the metaphor of classroom or prison is really, you know, you can use the same cinder block to build one or the other.
Yes.
And the cinder blocks are like the moments in our lives that we choose either an egoic thought system that reinforces the idea that we're separate and that, you know, my needs are more important than yours and there's better than and less than, and it's all very comparative. And actually, I had a conversation with another student of metaphysics the other day, and we were talking about gratitude and the Thanksgiving holiday that's upon us shortly, and
beautiful,
and how the idea of being grateful for things that come and go, sure, why not?
Yes.
But how much more profoundly helpful is the gratitude for what doesn't change, what we all have, what we all have in common, and what couldn't possibly be taken away from anyone. And that shifts us back to the awareness of the mind, which really ties in beautifully to the first of the seven hermetic laws, which we'll spend more time on next time.
Absolutely.
The law of mentalism. But that's I think, a great introduction to the idea that, you know, we have these laws that apply and to everything we do. And if we work with them, we are essentially dismantling the prison that our selfish identity keeps adding bricks to by default, and we instead take those same bricks, and we were talking about used brick the other day and how valuable it is. So it
yes.
just kind of comes crosses
yes.
my mind.
Yes.
But we're taking those bricks and dismantling an old structure and building something that serves our real purpose that is an eternal one, with the same opportunities, the same moment-to-moment decisions in the mind of what we want to identify with.
It is so true. It is yeah. so true. It is so true. I mean, Bruce, it's fascinating, and I love so much. Some of my favorite shows, if not my favorite shows, are having you on, because it gives me an opportunity to expand what I, you know, traditionally perceive as to be normal or real. And you know, every time that we think about these universal laws that we're governed by, every time we kind of touch on the quantum level of what we're dealing with, it 180 degree warp, you know, 180 degree warps the perception
uh-huh.
of where I was before I walked into the studio, and I feel that, you know, the listeners are the same way. It's if we can take this knowledge, if we can take this understanding, if we can take these scientific scientific conclusions of, I mean, literally breaking the laws of what everybody thought. I mean, these scientists spent their whole lives dedicating themselves to looking under a microscope and then defining what that means, or, you know, looking through a telescope and defining, you know, what looking back in time and space is, or what looking forward could be, or what, you know, and it's all being warped by these conversations that we're having. It's all being stripped away. It's not real. It is all I get passionate about it because it's so present, and every single day more and more and more there's more experiences. You hear these terrible things on the news, and then you think to yourself, how am I a vibrational equivalent to this? You hear, you know, how you're a part of this collective world, and then you hear something that happens halfway across the world, and then you feel bad, your heart drops.
But then
at the same time, you want to say, wait, I am the creator of my own reality. This is all a holographic projection of my consciousness. Nothing is real. We live in a quantum universe. So at what point is there a threshold between disconnecting the individual from the collective consciousness of fear and hate and worry versus the individual creating their own reality, which does not include those painful emotions? So it's we're on the teeter-totter here, man. It's, you know what I mean?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because I suspect you're referring to recent world events in France, and
yes,
the Middle East, and places like that. And if we look at the contents of our mind once again and ask ourselves, how do I feel about what's going on? There's an opportunity there at, no matter how heinous the circumstances or how abysmally insane some of the goings-on might seem to be, to look at that and see, what if the people that are involved in these on you know, both sides, if you will, of the circumstances,
right.
Are playing out a script that we've all collectively written.
Whoa.
And if our true reality, and this kind of jumps across to, in some ways, what might be considered a more advanced idea, but it's really all part of the same thing. So it doesn't really matter that we jump to that. But if what we really are is this eternal being, then and obviously it would be totally nuts to suggest that we would want to justify or anyway condone some of the activities that you know, people that have been labeled as terrorists or have been doing. And
of course,
and you know, obviously, I mean, that's a given.
Yeah, we would never want to accept the fact that we condone these,
right? Of course not. Of course not. Right. And at the same time, if we can shift our awareness to see, well, what if every single person, you know, animal, mineral, and vegetable, and atom, quark, molecule, person, country, planet, solar system, galaxy, on, is a reflection of my mind.
Yes.
Not my little m mind.
Right.
But my capital M mind that we all share. And what if on some level we orchestrated an incredibly compelling, highly photorealistic, holographic script,
yes,
that would be so convincing that it would be, you know, more amazingly macabre and in a way sinister, in the sense of a plot that seems inescapable,
right?
Than you know the most elaborate Matrix movie or
you were reading my mind. Go on.
Pick your favorite metaphors. But if at the same time, if we recognize that that's a drama and our opportunity to forgive the dreamer and undo our identification with the dream, while at the same time providing the optimal amount of support and comfort and care and relief and political activism and whatever else we're in a position to do that's born from a place of compassion and love and caring and interconnectedness.
Right.
What if that's really what's going on? What if that is actually an opportunity for us to look at the contents of our own mind and forgive the dreamer? That's why I put that in the subtitle of this book, is
right,
that if we can see that it's not a we-they situation, that anytime we see someone doing something that we find horrific, it's an opportunity to look at it and say, okay, you know, obviously on the level form, we may need to do something if it's something requiring our imminent and immediate attention. But in most cases, you know, particularly those of us in the Western Hemisphere leading relatively comfortable lives and maybe a few, you know, firefighting situations going on in our personal lives. But for the most part, you know, we have a relatively stable, steady circumstance that, you know, affords us the luxury of like what we're doing right now, David, talking about things that aren't about just immediate survival needs and things like that. We're actually able to have the luxury, because of choices we've made, to actually have conversations like this where we actually look at the contents of our mind and say, well, gee, maybe there's something to this.
Isn't that amazing?
Maybe there's something to the introspective process of looking at what's in our minds and seeing where we've made judgments and condemnations and seeing where that has contributed to the terror in the world, and seeing our complicitous involvement. And I'm not suggesting that everyone listening to this, blew up things in Paris.
Well, of course not.
Created terrorist acts in the Middle East, or pick your current event.
Of course not. Of course
not. Not on the level of form.
No.
On the level of that's why I started out this book with the idea of two thought systems, and I wanted to bring it back into this chapter because we can look at all these hermetic laws that we're going to talk about in more depth over the next 7 months, roughly, in a much greater context and a much greater usefulness if we see that it really distills back to that first chapter idea of what identity are we coming from. If we're coming from an identity of inclusion, then if we see everyone as is either expressing love or expressing a call for love, no matter how distorted that might be, that the Hitlers and the Idi Amins and the Genghis Khans and all the people that we probably don't have a whole lot of respect for, at some level, no matter how deeply buried that might seem, have had that same power of choice, decision-making capacity and faculty, and the same two thought systems that we all have. We all have an equally insane, 100% insane, madman ego thought system.
So true.
That is hell-bent on me first, and the warfare and the selfishness and the ghastly, truly ghastly perspective that it maintains is something that none of us wants to look at, and so we project it out. And I think that's a great gift that Sigmund Freud gave to the world, and one of my favorite teachers, Kenneth Wapnick, goes into that in great detail in a lot of his work about how much we really owe to Sigmund Freud, even though there are things that he may have been off on a tangent, but one of the things that he was brilliant was that he suggested that our dreams are projections of our unconscious mind of things that we didn't want to look at.
Yes.
Well, this great spiritual masterpiece that I've been studying again for the last 8 years, fairly intently, having discovered it in the mid-80s, called A Course in Miracles, suggests that our unconscious sins, guilts, and fears, all that shadowy stuff of the matrix, the underworld of our mind, that we thought we somehow could get rid of by projecting it out onto a cosmic holographic theater. It's there. It's still there. It's just that we think that we can somehow, not in my mind's backyard, throw it over the fence and say, okay, now, see, there, the problem's over there. It's not my mind. But if we're willing to look at it with that idea of inclusion, that's what frees us to actually say, oh, this is an opportunity deserving compassion. Well, now, in terms of the level of form and the level of behavior, the most compassionate thing might be to support whatever political solution or relief situation, humanitarian aid or solidarity or, fill in the blanks, because we all have different approaches that work for us and different opportunities based on our time, our interests, our availability, our, financial situations, what we can contribute to changing things on a local and a global level to make a positive difference in the world.
Of course.
But recognizing again throughout all of that there's this part of us that remembers that what I'm seeing on my television or on my computer or in the newspaper or wherever that I'm hearing about current events, that is a mirror. That's in fact that same conversation I was mentioning that happened a few days ago with another friend on her show she was talking about a TV show where there was this fantasy world where there was this mirror that was broken into thousands and millions and billions of pieces, and each person was a reflection. And we can either, at any given moment, reflect the light or the darkness.
Wow.
And I thought, what a great metaphor.
That really is.
Because there's just this intrinsic oneness that we all share. But we're so convinced that our little fragment is the big deal. And excuse right? me, get out of my way while I take care of my little fragment, my right? little shard.
It's so
but, you know, that's kind of the norm. And so we sort of, you know, our culture sort of deals with that. As and we don't even think much about it because that's, you know, the everybody for themselves, the WIIFM, what's in it for me, is
yes.
the acronym. I remember learning that when I was doing some consulting for the Air Force a few years ago. And it was like, well, okay, well, but that's a given that's how the matrix, the shadow matrix side of our mind works, if you will, with what the Course in Miracles calls the egoic mind.
Yes.
But that's not doesn't have to be how we operate.
Exactly.
There's an inclusive paradigm that's equally, convincing,
influential. Yes.
And but instead of being 100% insane, this one is 100% sane, and we all have the faculty, even the tyrants and the historically bizarre, over-the-top examples like Adolf Hitler and
right.
I'm sure we can think of countless others
right.
that
exactly.
that have exemplified consistently choosing the ego mind
yes.
Are behind yes. that there's still a little glimmer, a little sliver that we all have of the opposite polarity, which
insanity.
Is the,
yes.
the mind that knows that there is an essence that
wow.
we can choose instead that leads us to peace, that leads us to resolving conflicts. And it starts in the mind because that's where it really all exists. And what we see outside of us is just the outpicturing, the shadow on Plato's cave that we've gotten so, attached to and,
yes.
and made such special relationships out of and such tremendous fixations on. But that's kind of to be expected because we've taught ourselves over millennia to do this. So
exactly.
So we need to be patient with ourselves and give ourselves time to undo that incredible training that we've
wow.
mind training that we've given ourselves to identify with those fictitious creatures.
It's so true. It's almost like, as we go on through life, from the moment that we're born into this physical platform, little do we know at that age, well, maybe we do, we can't remember, but little do we know, at least from my understanding, that we have the choice to not perceive the negativity around us, right? So, for example, we don't know the personal, in-depth childhood experiences that Adolf Hitler experienced
exactly.
as a child. So
exactly,
and I'm not using that I'm not using that to nullify his,
right. It's not to condone or to
no,
justify.
No, exactly. No, exactly.
But you said. To explain, given the limitations that thought system
exactly.
imposes when one takes it seriously, when one takes that insanity seriously,
you
wouldn't want to go there, but you can understand how someone might make those extreme choices.
Exactly.
Even though they are, to someone seeing a bigger picture, completely insane.
Right.
But then that's the whole point, is if we can help each other in a non-condemning way,
get back to their sanity.
See beyond our limitations
yes.
and say, oh, well, have you considered this?
Yes,
and,
yes, yes.
And that perspective, when it's not out of a condemning or a critical...
judgmental, right,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. That perspective then frees us up
wow.
to see our own blind spots and our own, scotomas, I think they're called, where somebody else... sees our craziness and says, oh, well, gee, doesn't Bruce see that?
Right?
And maybe I don't,
Yeah, it's so true.
If we all are smarter than any one of us, then, that's kind of that same principle again, isn't it? But that's that principle of inclusion that suggests that if we see from that perspective
right.
and welcome the feedback from our world as an opportunity to heal our misperceptions, that's where the undoing of the sense of tragedy and the sense of hopelessness comes from, because then that returns us back to our mind.
Yes.
Where, sure, we don't want those things that appear on the headlines to happen.
Right.
And we want to do everything within our power to prevent and minimize those.
Exactly.
And at the same time, it's when they inevitably do, because that's the nature of the thought system that made up this world.
Right. Right.
As an insane escape from an exodus from perfect oneness that never happened.
Right.
You know, as Ken Wapnick says, a maladaptive solution to a non-existent problem.
What a paradox!
yeah. We can
what a paradox.
Begin to gently laugh at ourselves for taking that seriously.
Wow.
And Freud talked about nighttime dreams, but what if all of the dreams that happen in the nighttime, they only shift the channel or the frequency,
right,
to where it seems more vivid during what we call our daytime, which is really nothing more than a daytime dream for the most part.
Exactly. And I mean, that brings us right back to the point of projection and everything.
Yes,
is a hologram.
Yes.
Of, you know, so if everything is a hologramic projection in your dreams, then what makes it a different, right? What makes the difference between everything being a hologramic projection in physical 3D earth plane reality? I mean, it really comes down to the point of there is nothing outside of projection of consciousness.
Right.
And how, and I just recently, I've listened to him, you know, years ago, but then I kind of recently just started getting back into him, the speaker Stuart Wilde.
Uh-huh.
So he talks about, you know, multifaceted dimensions existing on the earth plane. He talks about, just a different, literally, there's layers of dimensions that exist within this earth plane. And, you know, depending on the individual's consciousness, they can sift in and out of these dimensions on the earth plane. That's how Paramahansa Yogananda was able to levitate himself and, you know, supposedly in his autobiography, move mountains with his mind and all these phenomenal things, is because he vibrated his consciousness to the actual setting of his reality, where his body no longer, and Stuart Wilde talks about this, he goes, the body dematerializes into everything. So it's like the body is no longer a solid physical form. It starts crossing through these multifaceted dimensions where these dimensions start losing their physical constructs, and then you're still aware of your consciousness, but suddenly you don't have an arm, and then suddenly you don't have a body, and then all of a sudden you don't feel anything, and then you just feel vibration. So he goes into all these different levels, and he talks about, you know, using ayahuasca with shamans to take him on these journeys and all this and that. But the point being, right, all of that aside, regardless, the point being that there is no difference. It is all one. It is all oneness. There is no difference
between
what you are experiencing. There is a difference between what you're experiencing in anger and in love, but what I'm saying is there is no judgment. It's all up to you. It's all a reflection of you. No one's saying you have to be happy or you have to be sad in this moment because you lost this, or no one's saying you have to be happy because you won $10 million. They're just, it's all literally a projection of what you think you should receive, an expectation of what you think is right for your experience.
Uh-huh.
And that's it. So if you're worried about terrorism, you are adding to the collective consciousness of terrorists doing these acts. So,
well, certainly if we are condemning,
right,
then instead of, obviously, you know, there are things that may be appropriate to do that could minimize the impact and
meditate. Think of joy.
Minimize the reoccurrence and so forth and so on.
Of course,
but if we can, like you say, look at the projections and look at the fact that our interpretation and our expectations is a mental thing, and that we have choice over. We're not going to mess with the laws of physics necessarily.
Yes.
And change the factual outcomes that have already passed by in terms of things that, you know, an objective observer, which of course is an oxymoron, I suppose, in terms ever since quantum physics arrived on the scene. But I'll set that aside for the moment. But in other words, if we can look at the fact that our interpretations and our expectations hugely make a difference in terms of our experience of any particular event, that's where the freedom lies. That's where, and ironically, the moment that we stop identifying with the person who seems to be at the mercy of something outside, and thinking of that this other person is doing this to me, as opposed to I am using this actor in my mind stage to fulfill something that I've projected,
exactly,
and that I can afford to forgive myself and this seeming other for what has never happened in eternity, but it has appeared to have happened in time, and use that as part of my classroom, then that can be hugely helpful.
Yes.
That can be enormously helpful.
That is so true. Bruce, I love you with all of my heart, brother. I am so... It warms my heart, but simultaneously breaks my heart that we come to the end of the show.
We're at the time already.
We're at the time already. I can't believe. I know. It seems like it's 5 minutes.
Well, we have more to cover.
Time doesn't. Well, if you really want to get into it, the time just doesn't exist. So
that's
we're just
we'll be back momentarily.
Exactly. Oh man, I love it, Bruce.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bruce. Ladies and gentlemen, Bruce Rawls. You guys got to make sure to check out geometryco.com. Make sure to check out acimblog.com. Of course, brucerawls.com and wp-webdesign.com. Bruce is just a man of many trades, an extremely enlightened individual who I feel and we feel at the Dave's Vibration Station of LA Talk Radio crew feel honored to have as a regular here on the Vibration Station. Bruce, all the unconditional love, light, happiness, joy, abundance, and laughter.
We're all working on it together, aren't we?
Yeah, yes, we are. Yes, we are. That's all from our hearts to yours, from my heart to yours, of course. Thank you for everything. And we will see you. We'll see you in just a couple weeks, which actually will be in just a moment. So close your eyes and we'll talk to you soon.
Blink.
No kidding. Well, thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Make sure to follow
us.
That's at Good Vibe Station. And once again, geometrycode.com. Can't miss that. Bruce, thank you for everything. We love you guys. And we'll see you next Sunday. Bye-bye.